For more inspiring content, subscribe to JK Yog and press the bell icon to never miss a latest video.
This whole world is in strife. There's conflict, tension, anxiety, fear, hatred, war going on in all regions of the world. Of course, there's the threat from North Korea and the pirates of Somalia and the problems of Ethiopia, etc. But this strife and anxiety and tension is all pervading. It seems like conflict is an integral part of this world. However, the Vedas inform us that there is no conflict anywhere. The world is a veritable form of God. God Himself has become this world. Ishavasyamidagvam sarvam yatkincha jagatyan jagat. This is the Ishavasya Upanishad of the Yajurved. Purukha eve dagvam yadbhutam yachya bhavyam. This is the Purusha Suktam. Purush is everywhere. And the Bhagavad Gita says, Vasudeva Sarvamiti. Vasudev, Shri Krishna, is all pervading. Siya Rama Maya Sab Jag Jani. Ramayana tells us, everywhere is the form of Sita Ram. So our Vedas inform us that this world is the veritable form of God Himself. He has become this world just as a spider extracts the web out of its own body and then occasionally absorbs the web back into itself. So God has become the world and is all pervading in this world. He has presented it perfectly for the evolution of our soul towards Him. Hence, this world is not the cause of our problems. But the fact remains that we are experiencing problems. So what then is the cause of our problems if it's not the world? They inform us the cause is within us. Agyanamevasya hi moolakaranam. There is agyan or ignorance within us. If this ignorance could be somehow destroyed with true knowledge, not just knowledge of words, theoretical knowledge, but realized knowledge, and we could come into the light of divine wisdom, our problems would cease to exist. Moha sakala vyadhin karmula tinhate puni upajahi bahusula. The Ramayana also says, this ignorance is the cause of human misery. So we need to remove that ignorance and move towards knowledge. How do we get this knowledge? There are various contending theories on what is the knowledge that can resolve the problems of human beings and humankind at large. Varieties of theories for human welfare are being propounded throughout the world, and they have been propounded throughout the history of humankind. There is socialism, Marxism, Maoism, fascism, Leninism. And in our own India, we've got Advaitwad, Dvaitwad, Vishishtadvaitwad, Vishuddhadvaitwad, Dvaitadvaitwad, Achintya Bheda Bhedwad. And each of these have got further branches. For example, Advaitwad has got Drishti Srishtivad, Srishti Drishtivad, Vivartavad, Avajjatvad, Bimba Pratibimbavad. So there are so many theories floating around, endeavoring to resolve the problems of humankind and presenting knowledge which they claim contains all the solutions. Now, what do we ordinary people do when we have so many schools of thought? First of all, we need to simplify the matter. All these theories can be divided into two parts. First are the materialistic schools, and second are the spiritual schools. So the materialistic schools of thought say that you are the body and nothing apart from the body. So your body has got senses. These senses desire their objects. If you provide a constant and regular flow of objects to your senses, you will be happy. So, enhance your material prosperity. That is the way to welfare. The spiritual schools of thought contend this, including all the great religious traditions of the world, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism, Taoism, Shintoism, and of course, the Vedic Sanatan Dharma. They say that, all right, you wish to provide your senses with their objects. Now, if providing that sense object results in quenching the desire forever, then it is a solution. But if each time you provide your senses with their objects, and then after a little time again the senses demand these objects, then it is an exercise in futility, because it's like the bath of an elephant. The elephant has a bath in the river. It comes out, takes the mud on the banks, and then sprays it over itself. Why does the elephant do that? Even I don't know, you ask the elephant, but it doesn't. So the spiritualists say your search for happiness is like chasing a mirage. You need to understand you are not the body, you are something beyond this body. That self-awareness is an aspect of SQ. You know, nowadays they are recognizing that intelligence is not mere cognitive ability. Ability to solve problems. But there are different compartments of the intellect. Somebody has got emotional intelligence, somebody has got social intelligence, etc. So the latest one that psychologists have realized is SQ, spiritual intelligence. So 2 weeks from now, I'll be giving a lecture in Intel. So they said, what topic will you speak on when the lecture was being fixed? So I chose the topic spiritual intelligence inside. The SQ chip. The SQ chip. So, one aspect of spiritual intelligence is self-awareness. Who am I? All the spiritual traditions of the world say this is the first step. You are not just a combination, a bag of atoms and molecules, as the reductionist model of science would have us to believe. There is something more to the eye than meets the eye. So that eye is divine. And the bliss that will satisfy the self is also divine. The material objects of the world will always leave you discontented. These are two theories. For those who believe in the materialistic schools, they keep running in that direction. They don't land up for pravachans like this. But those, asti parlok ityevam dridha matir yasya sa astika, the Nyaya Darshan says, who is an astik? One who believes there is something beyond death. And our actions have consequences beyond death as well. That person is an astik. So those people could qualify as spiritualists, and they are the ones who come to hear lectures like this. So we need spiritual knowledge. How do we get this spiritual knowledge? In our Vedic tradition, the Vedas have a paramount place, beyond compare. Sarvan Vedat Prasiddhyati. The validity of any spiritual principle has to be established on the authority of the Vedas. If the Vedas are saying this is correct, it is correct. If the Vedas are not validating it, there's reason to disbelieve. So the Vedas have the foremost place in our Sanatan Dharma, what we call the Hindu religion. And to explain that Vedic knowledge, we've got a whole lot of scriptures, which are collectively called the Vedic scriptures. These include the two itihas, historical texts, Ramayana and Mahabharata, the Shad Darshan, the six philosophic treaties written by six rishis, Mimamsa, Vedan, Nyaya, Vaisheshik, Sankhya, Yog, the Ashtadash 18 Puranas, the 100 Smriti Shastras, thousands of Nibandhas, to just mention just a few. All this is called the Vedic literature. Now, in order to understand this Vedic literature, to merely read it would require 500 years. And if it took us 500 years to get the theoretical knowledge right, how would we ever practice it? So we need knowledge quickly. To reach this Vedic knowledge are three starting points called the Prasthantrai, which have been highly emphasized by all the great acharyas. And they have written their commentaries on these. The first is the Brahma Sutra, the Vedanta Darshan. The second is the Ekadash Upanishad, 11 of the important Upanishads. And the third is the Bhagavad Gita. Now, amongst these, the Brahma Sutra is exceedingly difficult to comprehend. It's deep philosophy. And the Upanishads too are not within the grasp of an ordinary person. The Bhagavad Gita is more approachable. Firstly, it is simple and easy to understand. Secondly, it gives a comprehensive view of the whole Vedic philosophy. That is why it is respected as much as the Upanishads, And it is also called the Gitopanishad. Lord Krishna, he says, Sarvopanishadogavo Dogdha Gopala Nandana. Arjun, these Upanishads are like the Kamdhenu, wish-fulfilling cow. And me, Shri Krishna, I am the Gopal who has milked this Upanishads, and I am presenting you this knowledge in the form of the Bhagavad Gita. So the Bhagavad Gita has been exceedingly popular through the millennia, and the great acharyas wrote their commentaries on it, Shankaracharya, Madhvacharya, etc. And then in the previous century, the leaders of our freedom struggle, starting from Bal Gangadhar Tilak, Mahatma Gandhi, they all declared that the source of their inspiration was the Bhagavad Gita. So it became even more popular. And they impacted the giants in the West, like Nelson Mandela and Martin Luther King Jr., etc. So the Bhagavad Gita became even more popular. And in the 1960s, the gurus who started coming from India to the West, they also kept the Bhagavad Gita as their important text. So this Bhagavad Gita has now got worldwide popularity. But our respect for it is not merely because of its popularity. We respect it because it contains infallible knowledge. Infallible knowledge is not that which is derived from the senses. The senses could deceive us. Infallible knowledge comes from the descending process. When the source is perfect and you receive knowledge from that source, there is no scope for doubt. The perfect source is God Himself. He cannot make mistakes. And God has given this knowledge to us. Supreme Lord spoke it to Arjun. So that is why the source is perfect. We can, with our eyes closed, accept this knowledge. Now, this time for our series at the Sunnyvale Hindu Temple, I have chosen the topic of the Bhagavad Gita, and in particular, chapter 12. It is entitled Bhakti Yoga, the Yoga of Devotion.